Visual artist Kate Parker grew up roaming bushland in the Kaiō in the far north. That early introduction to the natural world is reflected in the art she produces. Her latest endeavour is her debut children's book, Kōwhai and the Giants. It features illustrations using very few colours, capturing dark and shade in a golden glow. You can see examples of this in a gallery on our webpage. Running alongside the pictures is a narrative Kate hopes will inspire tamariki not only to engage with the environment, but be inspired to protect it. Kia ora to Kate, who's in our Tamariki Makaurau Auckland studio.
Welcome. Kia ora, Catherine.
Lovely to talk to you. What's striking, off at the start of the book, it's the first word that captures you, or the first sentence, and I know as a writer that's a priority. What's going to capture the attention of the reader? For me, it's your first illustration, and it's this beautiful little kōwhai flower in the shape of a little girl falling. It's just absolutely stunning. And rather like a first word, did a first illustration come to you?
Did you mean?
Well, that as an idea, as a concept, as a visual concept, to open a book is just startling and captivating.
Well, it's really interesting because when I was creating this work, cutting out the pictures and cutting out the story, different things came forward first. So this, the picture that you see at the beginning of the story, didn't actually appear until sort of further down the track, but it became the beginning of the book, I guess, character of Kōwhai.
And at some point, so did you have the character of Kōwhai from the beginning?
Yeah, I did. I had visualised or thought about an entity that would be in the forest, and that would be like somebody that would have seen the forest over a period of time, thousands of years actually. I thought about how the forest had stood the same, growing and regenerating, and for thousands of years before humans arrived. And yeah, I just wanted to embody that character in a being, so that you could see that being and witness what humans have done to the landscape, and then forward into the future, imagining what could come next.
She's so beautiful. And the other thing that occurs to me, and anyone who's seen little kōwhai flowers, you know, being blown off in the wind or making their way, will recognise her. But she's also almost in the fetal position as she's falling. And when you see, like when you come to illustration, as we said, there's a few base colours that are used here, but they're literally golden and glowing. It's almost like a light is shining. And when you come to illustrate a story again, I mean, I always think as a writer, because I have absolutely no illustrative ability whatsoever, when you come to illustrate, is it visual? Will you see images that carry the power you want them to carry? And then there's the process of replicating.
Yeah, it's so interesting because this work, you know, was developed through an artist residency that I did through the Auckland Council, where I was able to go out and stay at a batch at an out of Anafata on the west coast of Auckland, of the Waitakere Ranges Regional Park. And the imagery I was getting was coming from light shining through my window. And then I started cutting things out of paper and kind of holding them up in the light, and then looking at the way the light bounced from the back of one page and forward to the front of the next page. And so then I just started playing with what that might do. And I wasn't really even thinking about the story or a story. I was just thinking about, I was just looking at black and white photographs of the forests and the way the trees had been taken, like the massive kauri trees had been taken out of the forest, and the burning bush and things like that. And then these amazing sort of trains that took the kauri logs along the beachfront around Karikari, and sort of precariously along these kind of... So I think the water came in quite a lot closer to the land than it does now. So these kind of train tracks that kind of took these great logs out. And so I guess when it comes to sort of looking at illustrating or making something visual, I was just really looking at shapes and, yeah.
It's almost meditative then what you're doing and contemplative what you're doing, even if it's sometimes distressing material. But I'm curious also as to this, you literally will cut shapes as your process. This is not like sitting and sketching on a page out of your
mind. I don't see myself as a, like before I started this work, I didn't see myself as being someone who could draw very well. I just would sort of roughly sketch something and then sort of snip at it with my scissors and then hold it up in the light. And then I loved just looking at the shapes. I just got banana boxes, actually, and cut them back out and then just started kind of making these pictures. And I don't know, my family, I don't know what they thought I was doing. I was kind of just, and I had these boxes stacked up in the window and I was kind of working on different pictures. And then slowly the story began to kind of take shape. And then I began to get better paper, better quality paper to be able to recreate what I'd drawn and then try my best to kind of draw better. But it was just the outline, which I was quite relieved about, because then I didn't have to fill in, you know, I didn't have to actually draw the face. I could just do the silhouette.
Fascinating. And the light is the constant medium here. And you capture this. If we go a little further into the book, the giant's breath covered the land, filling valleys and giving voice to strange and beautiful birdsong. And we've got that classic layering of, what is it, 1, 2, 3, 4 hills that many of us will recognise from any number of coastal settings in New Zealand, and how the light first gives them shape and gives them, and then becomes silhouette and then becomes darkness and you can't see the difference at all.
Yeah, so. I love that. I love looking across landforms like that. And when the weather is a different, you know, it might be misty or, dawn light, when it's when you get those really strong silhouette shapes and landforms. I love that.
So here we are with the shapes, and you are contemplating also the story of the place you were staying. How does the journey then evolve over time to become this book for children? Go ahead.
It was a long process where I was able to from doing the initial. It was ended up being about 3 months' work where I came up with the idea, and then I was able to exhibit the work up at the Arataki Visitors Centre, and there were 9 boxes, I think, at the time that had lights set behind them. So they're sort of like plywood frames, and then they had these layered pictures in them, and then the little text that would go with each frame went with the exhibition. And so from there I then had great feedback, although people were like, oh, it's a bit sad, the story is a bit sad, because it ended like kind of like halfway through, like I didn't get to kind of finish, I just had to exhibit where I was up to. And so I applied for money from Creative New Zealand to then develop the work further. And then from there, again, I guess it's a long process of I got some Haru Samishima to photograph the work, and then from there I was able to sort of work page by page and start to work out how are these pictures going to flow. And I had 22 at the beginning, and then I've ended up with 15, I think, in the book.
The other thing about this methodology is the beauty of the light being almost the central kind of, what's the word, central vehicle or central medium, is that it gives a sense of otherworldliness. This is where it almost, you know, comes to being a fable.
Yeah.
There's a sense of another world, a sense of another place and time, and you're not explaining it. You are transporting your reader there.
Oh, that's, great. Yeah, I love that. What I really enjoyed was a light made it uplifting. When you looked at the images and the boxes, they were bright. They lured you in, and they wanted to show you something. And so that's always intrigued me. And it's a bit like, you know, when I was growing up north, I remember my dad saying, you know, look around at this land that we're, and we lived right up the back of a valley, Omonu Valley. And he said, you know, this used to be covered in bush. And I remember looking around thinking, wow, there were all these kind of old tree stumps that we used to jump with our horses and just that were left lying. And they were just kind of remnants of this, what was a great forest. And I think it kind of struck me, wow. And then I started to think about that. And then when I'd go up on the mountain, the Maunga that was next to us, right at the top there was like forested area where you could climb to the very top. And every time I would go in there and go up to the top, it was amazing. There were these amazing kind of volcanic basalt columns and rocks that were just, you know, amazing forms and all covered in moss. And it was all kind of, and it was a really magic kind of place. And I remember going up there, and every time we would come to go back down again, we would get lost and we would come out at a different point. And I always used to think, there must be something in there that's playing with us to, you know, to make us lose our way as we come out.
Like a shifting kind of set. Yeah, someone's moved the set on you.
Yeah. And so I was always intrigued by...
It's a sense of a forest being alive, though, isn't it?
Yes.
And alive in an anthropomorphic sense, not just being trees, but being aware of you as you are of it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
The finishing halfway through, and this is all a bit, you know, sad and depressing, of the exhibition, because of course these magnificent trees get cleared over time, and we see this through the book, and there's fewer and fewer of them. At the point that you wanted to tell a redemption tale, was it because it was for children, or is it because you are seeing things that genuinely give you hope?
I think it's that, I don't know, but I don't know when the shift happened for me in my life, from when I didn't really notice these things to when I started to notice. And maybe it's as you get older and you've got children of your own, and you think about what is it going to be for them when they get older and have children. And at the moment I live out in the Waitakere area, and we've got these big kauri trees outside our house, and the kauri tree in the area are dealing with kauri die back, and, you know, and they're... There are two kind of species. There are species that support, you know, 17, 18 different other species of tree. And so they, you know, create the earth. They change the earth in order to allow these other species to grow. And if they're sick, then, well, what's going to happen? And so, and I was watching our trees outside our house are really healthy. And every year these seeds flutter down, because they've got a little wing on them and they float down, and they're only viable for, I don't know, a couple of weeks. You have to catch them quick if you want to plant them. Whereas I guess some seeds, like the kawhai seed, are really hard and they've got a shell and they can go out in waves and sea and crash onto beaches and they're still okay. But I just thought that the time is now. We need to plant our native trees now. I'm just watching, you know, things disappear even in our urban areas, like the urban tree protection has been taken away from Auckland. And I just wanted to, I guess, create something where there's hope, where, you know, the planet is really vibrant and it will regenerate super quick if we just give it half a second. And so, yeah, that's, I guess, I saw seeds fluttering down and just people planting them. And
next minute, that's what's happening. It's in the story. Feeling Kawhai's touch, they threw down these seeds. Help us, they whispered. And that's important for children. Children love agency. They love to know there's something they can do to help themselves or help the situation. I'm sure that's why they love all the Harry Potter stories and all these, you know, stories where they're lost in a forest or whatever.
They
don't have the agency of adults because they're children, but stories that tell them there are things they can do are very empowering.
I think it's that belief too, isn't it? Because, like, I've been working at a school in New Lynn School, and they're a primary school with a great diversity. And I've been talking to these kids, and they are just geared up. They are not... you know, they've got these amazing ideas with what they think needs to happen on the planet. And one of the things that I think they were really clear about was that we need to wake up and we need to get with it. They were drawing me these pictures. I had one boy drawing me these sort of concentric circles where he put, he said, this is me in the center. And he put a little circle and he said, and around the outside of me is dogs and cats. And then around this, you know, there might be some fish around that. And there may be some birds and then further out. And he kind of kept drawing the circles and it went right out. And he went, polar bears are right out here. And he said, and that's the problem. That is the problem. We're putting ourselves in the middle. And we don't want to be doing that. We want to be putting everything else in the middle and us on the outside.
From the mouths of babes, eh?
Yeah, so incredible. And yes, that's what we need to be doing, putting the earth at the centre.
The interaction, I can hear a poet actually in your speaking language as well as in your writing. It's clearly the artistry involved in making these picture box exhibitions. And you're also involved in theatre, I think. When you got back to New Zealand, did you set up the theatre? Tell me a little about that.
I co-founded Red Leap Theatre Company with my lovely friend Julie Nolan. And we studied in Melbourne way back in the 90s and came back to New Zealand in around 2000 and built a theatre company and travelled that theatre company around the place. Like we've made shows, Sean Tan's The Arrival we took to several different countries. Just working visually, really, working with physical theatre and visual imagery.
See, it's so powerful, and I often said that this is such a visual generation coming through. It has little option because of how our media has changed and the sheer rate of incoming. It's a very visual generation that is coming through, or generations coming through. And what is the potency, do you believe, of something like an exhibition of these light boxes and or incorporating theatre as well? Is it, you know, we're talking about your book here, but is this a particularly powerful medium for making people feel?
I think there's something in not having to sit and be told you're going to watch this. There's something in being able to you can walk in and you can walk out, you can choose to stay or go, you know. I love that about an exhibition. I'm working on something at the moment, actually, with the New Zealand Maritime Museum, and that's with the Child's Voice and with these kids at Newlyn School. And I think that allowing the audience to have their voice is actually super exciting for me at the moment. So
more interactive stuff.
Yeah, working with these kids, and they're deciding what's going to go where and who's going to be doing how it's going to look, and what they want to see, and what they want to say as well.
It's a beautiful book. Thank you for coming in, Kate. Kate Parker, the book is Kōwhai and the Giants. You have to see it, really, to understand what we're describing of her work. You can see some images on our webpage, rnz.co.nz. It's published by Little Love, which I think is an imprint of Mary Egan Publishing. $3 for every book sold goes to support Forest and Bird.